If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris Podcast family, a growing community of music and cultural podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and of course, music. For more, visit osirispod.com. Before we get to today's show, just wanted to thank you for listening to this episode. Don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, leave a review, or share this episode with a friend. We've launched the Sound Podcast merch store featuring great designs, including our world-famous bear on tees, long-sleeve tees, hoodies, and much more in various sizes and colors. Check it out at thesoundmerch.com and support the Sound Podcast creators while looking awesome. The show starts now.
Now some folks see a problem, and others see a cause. Walk in the thin line we wrapped around our laws. But I see a new day shining bright. We're all right. At the thought of you demanding the rights our fathers taught. They're trying to kill the dawn with the night. We're all right. Well, you could make a difference. You'd speak your mind. It's easy. Nothing to say that they're not aware of. Don't let them suffocate your light, 'cause you're all right. It's all right to be different. It's all right to be strange. It's all right 'cause everything someday must change.
You've been listening to It's All Right off of John Catalyst's latest release, On the Road. John has been on the show before, and we always enjoy welcoming such a talented guy. We were absolutely blown away by this release, not only because of the tunes, but because the time and care John put into tracking this record. In fact, that's where our conversation started, when I asked John about leading off the record with an instrumental tune, a jam with a Freddie King feel.
I'm, of the aesthetic of, like, if you're going to put out an album, then, you know, it should hang. The song should hang, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And some projects I've had, you know, where there's more emphasis on it being a calling card.
Right.
You know, so you want that, you want the first, you're just sort of assuming that it's, you know, going to, you know, an A&R rep or a talent buyer or something,
yeah, yeah,
instead
yeah.
of to, you know, someone who's listening to it for their enjoyment. And so I don't know, that's just, it's just kind of how it rolled out. I thought I had a lot of considerations for how to sequence this. And you know, and after looking at the tracks that were there, I liked the idea of having it just kind of start with an instrumental, in part because I liked, you know, the song, the titles for the instrumentals flowed kind of after the fact. They were kind of originally just generically Studio Jam 2 and Studio Jam 3, you know?
Right.
And then the, sort of how they closed, the rhythm of it suggested, you know, the titles to me. And then that ended up being a nice, you know, a little bit, there's a little bit of maybe an intention to have like a, you know, an opening statement of, you know, a little bit of trying to just get everything in there, in the first track, I suppose. And I like the How Am I Not Myself is also a, you know, in addition to just being a kind of a response to the Trolls, is also
right,
a reference to kind of a, one of my favorite sort of, I don't know what you categorize that movie, but the I Heart Huckabees. And it's sort of the central theme actually of I Heart Huckabees. So there's a little of that going on here.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned the Trolls. Is that something that, I think we touched on it the first time you were on the show, but is that something that continues to be in your consciousness? Is that something that you continue to worry about or care about?
When certain people just, you know, decide to keep putting it into my conscious stream, it'd be nice to be able to move on. But then, you know, every once in a while it comes, you know.
right.
You know.
Yeah, I get it.
So you know, and the thing about it is, you know, that not, you know, not everyone, it was a troll, you know,
yeah,
so to speak, with the, you know, like to spell it out, you know, like the fake Jerry label.
Right.
The challenge was, is still just that for some people it was a term of affection and they didn't mean it, in that way. Whereas other people took it as, you know, disparaging term and like to push it out as an easy put down without, you know, that not just like states their criticism, but kind of like puts me in a box at the same time. You know, a lot of people don't like it. That's art, and I'm used to that. but to have subtly defined and put into a box in a way is still something I find, you know, offensive. And so here's the easiest way to just get out there.
Well, I got to tell you, you do get out there, and it's a great, great intro to the rest of the record. It makes sense to talk about the rest of the band then, because there are some amazing performances on the entire record, but in particular, when you hear these guys playing in an instrumental way and in the jams, I'm curious first, before we get to the personnel, were these jams that were just constructed in the studio when you had Jay and Robin and Benji all together, or were these things that you knew what you were going to record kind of when you got everybody in a room or however you managed to put the thing together?
these were just improvs, and we were fortunate, you know, the fortunate offshoot of the modern digital recording environment is that you can just let the recording go and save everything.
Right.
So, you know, that's what we did. And we, you know, I sort of, you know, launched or asked, you know, either, you know, Jay or Benji or Robin to launch a little improv. You know, the way it would work is sometimes we'd rehearse a song that we were going to track, and then we'd, after we're done rehearsing it, we'd do a little, you know, we just have a little improv jam to clear our palette and just sort of get into that stream of consciousness groove feel and out of the constructing a track feel.
Right.
So, and then, you know, there were a couple other instrumentals that didn't, or, you know, or a couple other jams that happened that didn't quite, you know, the standalone jams that weren't necessarily keepers.
Right.
They were still fun, but these two in particular, I thought, like, stood out as examples of just improv, you know, morphing.
Right.
You know, we certainly could have spent more time, you know, in each of those territories before morphing, but then we, you know, it's more that sort of that kind of change in direction and having everybody pick up the new direction and develop it right away is sort of the kind of jamming that I've been into, you know, since my early 20s, since I've been, you know, like really focused on this kind of concert.
Here We Are is the second instrumental, and of course it closes out the record. So you've bookended what is a great record with two beautiful instrumental jams. So good on you. Let's talk about the personnel a bit. Jay Lane, obviously, you know from your time with Golden Gate Wingmen and other projects. Robin Sylvester is a Bay Area bass player who's played with everybody. I'm curious about Benji's, Porecki's place in all of this and how you came across Benji, because his work certainly opened my eyes to his playing, and somebody that I wasn't necessarily familiar with. How did you add Benji into the mix?
Benji I first met actually playing with Keller Williams' Grateful Gospel Project.
Right.
And he had gotten on Keller's radar as a sort of a, you know, D.C. area, you know, and what we call the DMV, D.C., Maryland, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
That he was kind of he had played, you know, with Chuck Brown, who was kind of like our local godfather of the local flavor of hip hop. He was a jazz guitarist. Uh-huh. In the 60s that is considered to be like one of the chief architects of go-go, of DC go-go funk.
Uh-huh.
And you know, Benji played with him for a while, he's also released a few solo records actually.
Right.
As a jazz artist. And man, is he, you know, he is a lot of fun to play with. He really gets this. And, you know, some of his heroes, you know, dovetail really nicely. And I really get,
it just fits, right? I mean, it just fits.
That's a great vibe to play with. I mean,
right, right. It's All Right is the first original, on the record. And, so inspirational, actually hit me at a really good time, so I appreciate it. Are you always writing songs? Is that something that you have, like, stored somewhere, lyrics for songs, and how you're going to articulate those lyrics? Or is it, hey, I'm cutting a record and I better come up with some originals? What's that process like for you?
In this case, It's All Right is a song that I wrote with Hairball Willie.
Right.
And performed a number of times, but never recorded. And then I ended up recording it. I did like a little solo EP thing that I called Acoustic Shareware Volume 1 back in 2003.
Uh-huh.
And I did record a simple like acoustic, you know, one acoustic guitar and vocal demo. I mean, it's still just a one vocal song. So.
Right.
And that's kind of when Eric Olson and I wrote together. It's just that's kind of like I was in. It came from a period of my songwriting where I was just sort of interested in blasting through the archetypal changes.
Right.
And so this is the one that has the oldest sort of pop blues style song that I've been able to find that used these changes is Ain't Nobody's Business What I Do,
mm-hmm.
but Deal and, the Hunter Garcia song Deal, Mississippi Half Step.
Right.
There are half dozen Grateful Dead songs that work that set of changes, and they're just iconic. They're nobody owns them. But I was in that phase of I was more oriented about like, oh, I want to write some songs with these kind of changes. Now when I write songs, I tend to be more like a little bit more of like, well, what do I want to sing about? and then a song construct from there. But then there's all this in between stuff, and there's songs I still like to play. And for for live performance, I look at as sort of a meta story of like putting the bunch of songs together can form a framework that has like just enough suggestion of a story that people can hang their own, hang their own drama on it and find their own meaning.
Right. That's certainly the case with Hanging of John Collins, right? I mean, that's a track that, again, has a narrative and is more in the traditional style of songwriting that you've, of the music that you kind of play.
That's a song that was originally recorded with Hairball Willie on the record Justifying Gravity.
Right.
And I had always kind of wanted to make a couple of tweaks on it, but it was more Robbie Jack's tune, and that was a certain lineup of Hairball Willie. There was this Hairball Willie evolved to a point where I became the principal lead singer, and so when I got interested in this song, I did a bit of a rearrangement of both the melody and some basically some chord substitutions. It was a really simple, literal three chord song, and I mucked it up with a whole bunch of other chords, but I felt like it kind of and now it's going to be a sequence of chords that I think will also be interesting to kind of to blow over. I've kept it concise. And this is really the only Hang of John Collins is the only track that was constructed in a more traditional way. The guys didn't know the song at all. We'd never played it live. And it was the second day where it was just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Right, right.
And this was the only tune that... There are a couple other tracks that came out as one song could get finished. A couple others just became like scratch pads for evolving some other songs. But this was the one where rather than it being a live take, we started with a bass and drum. We kept the bass and drums, but they both got edited, and then I overdubbed all the subsequent guitar parts. And actually, this is one where Benji tracked his keys at home and literally emailed them to the studio. Flew them into recording
That's amazing. Seen Love is another, I think it's an original track, right, on the record? And again, it's...
Seen Love is another of the older, there's sort of three tunes on here that are older Hairball Willie songs and two that are newer originals. And so this is "Seen Love" is the third older, mm-hmm. Older original. Similar story. It was a demo that Eric Olson and Jerry Baker had done. Jerry Baker was a guitar player that I replaced basically when he quit. Uh-huh. We're talking 1991, wow. And he quit to go finish college and didn't want to be distracted with the band anymore at the time, but there was this simple acoustic guitar and vocal demo, and then and I went and arranged it up for full band and added this kind of double riff figures that which I didn't mind being whatever references were coming.
Is that something that you think about a lot? I mean, the juxtaposition of the riffs and thinking about how these songs are not only going to come together again in the studio, but how you're going to recreate this stuff in a live setting, because I imagine these will now become staples of your sets in some way, right?
Well, actually, I mean, these have all been staples. Well, the Hanging of John Collins, I haven't really played much, but it's all right. And Seen Love has been in Golden Gate Wingmen sets. They've been in John Cadillac Band sets. They've been, both of them are like kind of core improv vehicles. I mean, there are some 20-minute It's All Right and Seen Loves played by the Golden Gate Wingmen for the jams in the interior of them. And so they're both one is It's All Right jam tended to be a little bit thematically about rhythmically shifting gears from a shuffle to a straight feel and then get back and changing keys in the process. And whereas the Seen Love jam was a little bit more about trying to preserve a specific key signature while letting letting the tonic float around up to a certain point when that key signature kind of changes into the back to the head figure. So anyway, those are
I mean it's deep in the woods for the people who are trying to understand, but I appreciate where you're coming from. Was it hard, to pick out the two Garcia Hunter songs on this, Lazy River Road and So Many Roads? Was it hard?
They're both songs I've actually kind of been chomping at the bit to record for a long time. So it was really, it was actually kind of one of the central goals of the session, honestly.
Really?
But just for my own satisfaction, just for the fun of it, and to kind of play it, just to track them, and there's nothing note for note there, but it's in canon for the arrangement, so to speak.
Right. But Lazy Live, what specifically are they? Songs that you relate to? Are they songs that you just love? What specifically about? Let's start with Lazy River Road. I mean, such a beautiful song, right? I mean, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. They're both songs I adore. So, in the process ended up sort of part of informing the idea of titling the whole project On the Road. But,
right. It makes sense.
As I look back on it. Lazy River, they're both songs I've loved to play a lot. So it's just, they never got studio treatments.
Right.
By the Grateful Dead. They're officially published just because everything they did live got published.
But So Many Roads specifically, I mean, that was the one, came late in the canon and never got published, obviously, but it's such an important song.
Both came in the 90s. They're both right around 92, 93.
Right.
Songs that came. Lazy River Road is actually a song that was one of my early, when Jerry was still around, I had a taper friend and I really wanted to learn the song, and there's no internet to go to. There's no anything. I went to my taper friend and I made a tape of five versions of Lazy River Road, and this is maybe 1994, 1995.
Right.
Yeah. And that's when I really wanted to learn it. So I've been playing it a long time. It's an early, an early Deadhead obsession song for me.
Is there a particular version of Lazy River Road that caught your attention in those early days? Was it the March 25th in Chapel Hill? Was it the Garden in 93? Was there any specific one?
No, I don't have a particular favorite version, although I think I like the feel. It got a little brighter, a little bouncier.
Right.
Around 95.
Right.
The last time I went kind of checking through, and that was where, I like a little brighter feel for the song than necessarily the first couple of years they played it. And that's true of a lot of the songs, and I don't think I'm being critical. I think I'm just sharing an aesthetic with them that I agree that they're the way they evolved them is better.
So many roads. We touched on it. You know, the last, you know, played at Soldier Field in July of 95, and really one of the songs that I think is one of those songs that we never heard recorded on an album, as you mentioned, like much of their music. And again, that's probably a song that you have to get from Taper Friends. I mean, you couldn't be at every performance and hear it all the time, right? I mean, that's something that, again, you had to figure out how to get copies of it and learn it and play it and really enjoy it too, right?
Basically, yeah. It was one that I appreciated back then, but it wasn't the one that called me, you know, to chase down multiple versions of early on. It was one I got to appreciate a little more, actually, as the Dark Star Orchestra got going. One of my favorite late era ballads. And interestingly enough, I think that I think I've kind of reverse engineered from inside it. Looking at, you know, getting close with the chord changes, I see a lot of stuff that's reminiscent of chord changes in the Beatles song Yesterday.
Right. Very true. Good point. The record comes out at the end of the week, November 23rd. You're doing a couple of dates, JK and Pals, around the release. And then you're back on the road with Golden Gate Wingmen, which will be nice to get back in the saddle with those guys again. Is the plan to, you know, continue sort of latching on to projects as they come about and doing some solo work? Like, what's the goal? I mean, some O'Teal and Friends dates. What's the plan for JK moving forward in the next year?
Well, it's kind of more of the same. It's going to be, you know, might be a little tricky to follow, but the website stays fairly up to date with all the different projects, and it's getting better all the time.
Right.
Basically, I guess I like staying nimble. I mean, I'm enjoying the solo shows, but not enough to give up playing with bands. And right now, I kind of share a number of players with some luminaries. That just kind of comes with the territory, I guess. And I really enjoy playing with Jay Lane.
Yes.
I've really been digging playing with Robin lately. And Benji's great. Jeff Kameny is great. One of my things that I don't share often enough is my long-standing appreciation for the role of keyboard solos took in Grateful Dead live concerts, you know?
Yeah.
I think a lot of times they get kind of forgotten and downplayed. And, you know, for me, it was a thing that I guess the first couple of bands I was in that I played a fair amount of Grateful Dead music in, and we didn't have a keyboard player. So I was, particularly starved, was kind of starved for it for a while. So now it's, Todd Stoops is another amazing keyboard player I've been playing a lot with.
Well, and Jeff has certainly fallen into that role, right? To be as good with the material as some of those original players in the band.
Jeff's as good as any of the guys that ever played with him. I gotta say, he has his own authentic jazz influences that he brings in that were different from either, you know, Keith's jazz influences or Brent's jazz influences, or, you know.
And as solid as Robin is, and he's certainly great, Reed probably brings a different, dare I say, more youthful approach to the playing in a very different way than Robin.
Different context, and he's also I think just a little bit more of a multi-instrumentalist arranger whose favorite instrument is a four-string bass, but he can, you know, he started on cello.
Right.
and I totally hear, you know, and he often approaches it more that way.
Cool. Well, man, thanks again for taking the time. I really appreciate it. You're one of absolutely one of our favorite players, and always great to chat with you. And like I said, off the top, I'm really digging the record and really digging the improv. And I've had a chance to see you recently where you just look like you're having a ton of fun playing, which is got to be so liberating that, you know, you're able to play with so many different players and just have fun with the material and have fun with the people on stage. So kudos to you for doing that.
Well, thanks a lot, Ira. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me.
Some of that was very technically deep in terms of John's style and what he puts into not only his recordings, but also the thought that goes into playing stuff live. The whole record is tremendous, and I would encourage you to grab it at johnkmusic.net. There are also a whole bunch of tour dates up, solo stuff, Golden Gate Wigman dates, and more. Before we leave you, have a listen to Seen Love, another tremendous cut from On the Road.
I've seen love in you, baby. Seen love. All that I have, I would give. With you in my life, I'd live. More than the day. Turn on my wrong.
Then comes a time when all in love, touching the souls of those above. Once in your life you've got to see what you have always done for me. And I've seen love in you, baby. Seen love, I've seen love in you, baby. Seen love, what's in the past? Nothing is quite what it seems. We've been this way once before, and still we come back for more.
Seen love in you, baby. I've seen love in you, baby. Seen love.
You've been listening to the Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit osirispod.com. Thanks for listening.
Osiris.